Yeah, so leave England on April 22nd, 5 weeks. So next 5 weeks now is a lot of time in London.
Yeah.
For the altitude centre there, which I've been training at, because they've got chambers there. It's where they've got 33 people in there doing Everest this year for the training.
33
people. So that's great because their chamber can take up over 8,000 metres.
Yeah.
Which obviously height to help adapt. So it's all about trying to help your body adapt to working at them heights. Obviously, yeah, 21% of oxygen is in the air at sea level, like we are now.
Yeah.
Top of Everest is around 6%. So for that, you're trying to recruit more red blood cells in your body, which helps your body adapt to that,
yeah,
that height. So do loads of work on that, and then just maintaining the work I've been doing really fitness-wise. Not trying to get injured now, not doing anything sort of silly, but also not losing the base that I've sort of built up, yeah, on the physical aspect.
Yeah.
And then probably a bit of mental preparing as well. You know, I'm doing a little bit with a psychologist, just almost informal, just about, you know, how to deal with certain dangers and certain situations which could come up on the mountain and around people. And it's been quite interesting for me because it's probably given me a greater appreciation of athletes. So when I think about the players in football I've worked with, and like actually the commitment they have to have to be an athlete, you know, into just the stuff that people don't see, the boring, the yoga, the pre-activation stuff, the nutrition, the hydration, the stuff, you know, recovery, you know, because I've had to do this, not to the level of a footballer, but similar. It's like, you know, when you're in the gym 3 times in a day, and people think, oh, that's probably great, it's like, it's bloody boring when you're in there alone. You know, if you're out running at 5:30 in the morning in the dark alone, it's a boring, lonely place to be. So I think it's been really good from that point of view. Because I think my athletes, I always have huge respect for every athlete anyway, but it's probably gone up another notch. Because it's almost like I've lived their world for since I left Norwich, so the last 3-4 months.
Yeah. And in terms of, like we were just talking about before we started, there's the mental aspect of it all, and I asked you, were you nervous or more excited? And it's very much still an excitement factor for you. You know, yeah, you can't wait to get going.
Can't wait to get going. I think it's become real the last couple of weeks. It's got close. You know, I think it's always been, when are you going? Oh, next April. When are you going? Oh, next April. Oh, brilliant. I'll see you before then. Great. I think now it's, when are you going? 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, last close, mate, isn't it? You know, and so I think it's sort of almost dawned as, wow, this is here. You know what I mean? This is upon us. But yeah, excited and I feel ready and just like said before, I just want to get out there now and get going really.
Yeah.
Must be like people who are ready for marathons or whatever, so I just want to run it now.
Yeah.
You know, I feel ready to run it, so let's get out there and do it. Or have a go at doing it.
And obviously this year or the last sort of period of time you've been more UK based, but you've done all the preparation because you've been, you know, Mont Blanc, you were saying, you've been in South America.
Yeah, I've taken it very serious from the start. So when this, I've always wanted to climb Everest. During lockdown, when I looked into actually, is it, how possible is it for a normal person like me? Because it should be like, you have to be superhuman to do it. And then I worked out you don't. But I've tried to then do it to achieve the work and not cut corners. Because some people cut corners, like in everything in life, that's all right for them maybe. But I've tried to do this as much prep as I can to give myself the best chance to be a successful, but most importantly, come back alive for my family, because that's ultimately the important thing here. I got a young family, and you know, hopefully the next 40, 50 years ahead of me as well in my own life. So it's like, yeah, I think that's been the key, is that not cut any balls, because it's been like, you know, if the guys at Altitude Energy, you must do 2 hours every morning of that. And even when I was working, okay, if I have to get up at 4 o'clock and do that before work, not a problem, I'll do it. I'm not cutting corners and I can't be arsed, I'll only do half an hour. No, I'm doing everything to a T. I think that's all you can do. And that's always my mindset. If you're going to do something, try and do it properly and give yourself the best chance. And that's, again, what we said before, it's controlling what you can control.
Yeah, yeah. And as you said, that's the, at this stage, so close, it's kind of, as you said to me, you know, you go for a run, you put your foot in a pothole, and you know, you're basically wrecked. Yeah. So it's those factors that are not under your control. That's probably where the nervousness is at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably starting to think about how worried my family are about it. You know, my mum's doesn't say a lot bless her, but she's you know, she's scared, and I know she's scared because when I speak to her, I can tell.
Yeah.
you know, I know I'm going to be leaving a wife alone with my son for 3-4 weeks. That's going to be hell for her, because her husband's away. There's going to be limited contact. I'm in a dangerous place. And then obviously my son, I'm lucky, I think, because he's still at the stage where he just thinks it's exciting as opposed to dangerous.
Yeah.
Which someone says to me over the weekend, actually, how old is he? And I said, you know, I'm really glad he's only 28 in the summer. I said, because he's still excited. I think if he was 2 years older, I think he'd be able to Google,
yeah,
start watching videos, yeah, start reading about some of the horror stories which happen. Yeah. And I think then he'd be super scared. Yeah. So it's just sort of, I worry about them being upset while I'm away. Because I mean, it's easier when you're doing the action because you're in control. You know, it must be like people in the army, right? When they're out, you know, their family are waiting to, have they come back from a mission? It's probably easier if you're in the mission because you know that actually I'm all right and I'm safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas they're sat there waiting for the message to go off, or
yeah,
they're dreading that phone call which no parent, wife, son, whatever wants to receive.
Yeah.
So yeah, them I feel, that's where, you know, if I ever start feeling upset or whatever, it's thinking about how they're going to be for that 3-4 weeks.
I mean, is it a cliche? I mean, is this the biggest thing you've taken on in your personal or professional life, do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's, I think it's a combination of it. I think it's been really good for me in terms of when I think about work and what's next. Because all the things sort of overlap, you know, so it's, you've got a top communication ability when you're on a mountain. You know, you have to be honest with how you feel. You can't be up that at them heights and trying to kid anyone. That I feel all right when you, because you get yourself killed or other people deal with you. You've got to show leadership in times of, you know, maybe one of your teammates is struggling and you've got to pick them up and say, come on, we can do this. So many things which sort of overlap what's been my world for the last 20 years in terms of work. But yeah, for sure, it's the biggest challenge because there's factors way out of my control. And I suppose as well, it is life or death, whereas football has never been that. You know what I mean? In all my time, Norwich, Huddersfield, Wolves, Liverpool, before. No one ever died, or got close to dying. You know, it wasn't, we lose a game, no one's not going to die. If we win a league, no one's going to die. You know, it was, you know, I've had a few heart attacks in the stadium and stuff like that, but again, that's not my control. But it's, whereas this is, yeah, this is big.
Yeah, and clearly wrapped around this is, you know, something that's very close to your heart, to your wife's heart, is the Summit Foundation.
Yeah.
And, while this is about you and maybe on a personal level and your challenge, ultimately there is raising awareness for that charity, which I think is coming up 2 years now since you officially launched it.
Yeah.
How does that tie in with, you know, this challenge?
Yeah, so when I started this journey, my wife Zoe said to me, if you're going to do this, you should probably get some good for it for other people.
Yeah.
You know, and because I was a bit like, oh, I'll just do it on the QT, get it done, no problem. I didn't want it to be a show. You know, there's downsides of it for coming to show because you can get beat up for it. But on the flip side, more importantly for that, is actually we can raise some money here which can genuinely help people. You know, we saw with Georgia recently, the young tennis player. You know, we could help her have a life changing experience by going to play abroad and be the first tennis player to do that. But for us also as well, like Norfolk's become our home. You know, it'll be our home, whatever happens next. You know, this will always be, you know, we were super conscious with Sebastian, our son, that, you know, both Eva Zoe and I really have got somewhere that we would call home. Because, you know, parents move and stuff, right? But we're always like, actually, for him, we want to have somewhere where in 20 years, we're like, no, come on, pull me back in Norfolk. That's our home. So we care about the area and we care about the people. And it's been an amazing place for us to bring up the son, to live. We're very passionate about it, and we think it's a place where so much good comes from it. You know, we've been lucky that we've lived in other parts of the UK where we realise actually how special this place is. So it's like actually a chance to give back to that, and give, but more importantly, give the next generation back. You know, that's nothing against older people, absolutely not. But it's a bit like we've got to try and keep the young people going in this area. We can't let it slump into like the other parts of our country where, and I know there's parties here, but there's drugs, crime, disorder, domestic abuse, all this crap. It's like, can we do stuff where actually we've got a charity where we can actually help inspire young people and give them financial support in stuff that they're then trying to do? And that's important for us, you know, and post-Everest, we'll continue the charity on. We might end up joining in with another charity because, you know, my wife's time, and if I hopefully back at work, my time will be limited then. But the fact of the matter is, we'll still be doing stuff where we want to raise it for this area, and that was important for us because we didn't have another cause, you know, like, you know, cancer research or something like that, you know, amazing charities and stuff like that. You know, fortunately, at the minute, there's nothing which super touches us for that. So it's like, well, actually, let's do something for young people on our own doorstep.
And is it also an element of that is young people who maybe don't have the life chances and opportunities that maybe other children are more fortunate to have as well?
You know, yeah, absolutely.
As we know, you know, there's a lot of inequality around. And
yeah, there's still bed poverty in Norfolk, where kids don't have beds to sleep in. And that's Norfolk, which I see as a part of the country compared to, you know, other places I've lived. We all need to. We've all got community responsibility, and those of us who are in a position who have got a voice to try and keep trying to try. Just, you know, we're only going to change the state of our country. It's a mess. If the next generation coming up, if we can inspire them to do more. And like I say, it's the people who have got less. That need more of a helper. You know, like our son's very fortunate, he goes to the top school, he has top opportunities within that school. So we're not doing it for him and people like him. We're doing it for the people who probably have more of an upbringing of me and my wife, where he had to scrap for everything and he didn't have these opportunities. Where it's like, actually, we got to help them. Because, you know, if you look at an interesting, I've been loads of visits since I've been out of work, one of them was actually the Red Bull. And they were talking about employees, you know, before we launched it. They were talking about their data and all that sort of stuff. And they interestingly said, we used to just recruit from the top universities. They said, but now we're starting to recruit in lesser universities because we want to have these guys who actually really need it. Yeah. Not the ones who are maybe privileged. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, that's right. You know, like, people, often our footballers, come from the, you know, Johnny Rowe, you might be saying it, Abu Kamara, these guys, Max, Jamal, all these, Raheem back in the day, the areas they came from. So it has to work out for them because the alternative is potentially jail or something else. So I mean, it's trying to have it where we can help people like this who then can then help themselves and then hopefully they can then inspire another generation. I think that's the important thing for us. The vision is, can we help Georgia, tennis player, who in 5 years she can return that favour to the next Georgia, and then that one can return it, and then all you know it, we start educating and helping ourselves out of this crisis that we're in as a country, because it's only going to come from us providing opportunities. If we just stick doing what we're doing, then where are we going? And it's our, yeah, we've got an 8-year-old kid, she's got a 4-year-old. It's like, we've got to do something which makes us better, better place. Because at the minute, so I think it's a scary place to come into. I worry about what my son is coming into when he's 16, 17, and we've got to try and do something to change it.
Yeah.
And we can only affect our little corner, right, and do a little bit to help. But if that helps 10 people over the next 5 years, that's 10 people more than before. You know, that's enough for us. We're not going to change the world. We're not pretending that we can. You know, we're not preaching to people. That's definitely not what we're about. But yeah, if we can help a few people, brilliant.
But as you said there, I mean, you and your wife, you know, the time that you can give to it. So I mean, how have you in these 2 years balanced the work life charity element and moving forward? How tricky is that?
It's been hard, but we've got great trustees at the charities. It's not just Zoe and I.
Yeah.
So they've been unbelievable. So now we've got all the social media, website stuff. Lauren does that for us. He's top class, because as you probably know, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So it's about using good people around us. And then really, sort of where I come in or where Zoe comes in, it's actually probably our contacts. And we can open doors and we can get to people and, you know, we can be the face of certain things, you know, because, you know, it's more likely you'd want to do an interview with me than with a great trustee that you've never heard of. So we know that, and that's where, you know, I'm doing so with Sky in April about Everest. They're not going to do that with someone that, if that hadn't been my time at Norwich, they have zero interest, Paddy. That's the truth. Yeah. So we've got to use that as an advantage for the charity, because it's for that reason. But it's tough, and I think going forward, like I said before, we'll probably look at maybe merging with another charity where they've got the expertise to take it on, but then we can continue to raise money and raise awareness, but through someone who's got more expertise than us, because we're not experts in this for sure.
And on that front of raising money, and to tie it back in with obviously what you've got coming ahead of you now, you know, you are looking to raise? I think your target's 50,000, isn't it?
Yeah, 50 grand, yeah. So we're at 20, more or less. You know, we've got a few promises as well, so we're probably in the mid-20s, which is great.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping during the journey, if we can get up to 50, that'd be amazing, because you know, that can help a lot of people. You know, Georgia we helped with 2,500, I think it was, from the money we've already raised, from previous things. And she, you know, so you think, if you can do 50, that's 20 versions of that, you know, that's a lot of people you're helping, a lot of young people, so...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's all right. You know, if we can do more, brilliant. If we do slightly less, that's okay as well. You know, everything's better. And we're just super grateful for the people who have supported it so far and continue to, whether that's financially, whether that's promoting it, whatever it is. You know, we're never asked for anything, but it's a bit like, if people can, great. If they can't, no problem.
Yeah. And in terms of if people do, having, you know, listened to this, watching, whatever, want to do something, I mean, basically just head to the website, all the details are there.
Yeah, all the details are there. You know, when you put it out, we can reshare social media, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, super easy. I actually was having a look last night, and you can see that the people have already pledged, and there was an interesting one that caught my eye straight away, the Norwich first team players.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was amazing. So, when I was leaving the club, obviously it's been well publicised since June, I think, we announced it.
Yeah.
But when it came to my last week, it was amazing because, I mean, the whole last couple of days was just blew me away, really. You know,
around the Cardiff weekend.
Yeah, so on the Friday, Neil Adams got all the players, all the staff together in the restaurant, and they did a presentation to me. They showed a video. I think one of the club shared maybe online, actually. It was like a farewell video, whatever.
Yeah.
Said some really nice things. Amazing, but also that day, Grant, there's Captain Grant Hanley, came to see me. He said, "Oh, can you?" Well, he texted me the day before. "Have you got a minute tomorrow?" Yeah. Came to see me and said a few nice words or whatever, and said, "Listen, the lads have all got together to say thank you. We didn't know what to do in terms of buying this or whatever, but raised for the charity," which is amazing. It was like 13 grand, I think. There's a lot of money, so that was amazing. And obviously the Cardiff game thing was brilliant as well. But
did you plan that ending?
So no, I mean
you had Amida stepping in. Like,
yeah, I was with him the day before. said, "Right, Adam, you'll probably come on late.
Yeah,
if you just score, that'd be perfect." You know, luckily, Adam, he delivered. No, that was nice. So, because I always knew on that day is my last game, and I always knew I was going to take my son down to the dressing room. So this might be the last chance to ever get to take him in that sort of environment, you know. And then obviously when we won, I've gone down to the tunnel area. Used David or something. Come here, could ever. Slashy's just running around. He knows all the players anyway, because he's just been around him since he was a toddler. You know, he'd come on Sundays if I was in watching training, I used to just take him in with me. You know, Tim Krul once joked the only reason he got a new contract was because he makes a fuss for my son. He's probably right. Or he repaid us, Tim. So that was just... So I couldn't ask for a better sentiment for the respect for lads to start.
Yeah, I mean, must have been quite surreal all around that weekend, but with a bit of distance now, I'm really interested, you know, that. And again, it's all relative because it's a job at the end of the day, but it was your life, all-consuming for 6 years. Was there at some point in the weeks or days after, did you wake up and, you know, you kind of a bit disorientated almost, because your whole purpose isn't there anymore, you know, what you got up and went and did every day of your life for 6 years. You know, was there, don't want to cheapen it, but is there like almost a sense of sort of loss or mourning kind of thing around it?
No, I haven't had that, actually. No. I thought I would, but actually haven't. So I think, which is good. I think that tells me it was the right time. I think having Everest has helped.
Yeah.
I think if I didn't have a purpose, I think that's where it'd be a problem. Yeah. That's why post Everest is super important, that I get a job or another purpose, because otherwise, like, what do I do? Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm used to, like I say, you know, time at Wolves, Liverpool, Wolves, Huddersfield, Norwich. For 20 years, it's been non-stop work. That's all I've done, that's all I've known. So then not have that was strange, but I think I was, on reflection, I was that tired I've never slept as well. It was probably 6 weeks. Right, just slept and slept with a clear head, and waking up not having stuff on my phone was amazing. So it's nice, but I think also what's been nice is I've left in such a positive way with the club that every time they win, I'm so happy. Okay, every time they lose, I'm unhappy, but it doesn't ruin my life anymore. And the people around me, because, you know, I'm not poor for 2 days at home. But every time they win, I'm super happy. Whereas I know so many people in football, and probably other walks of life, who leave an organisation and then they're actually super bitter.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that that's not me.
Yeah.
But I think I think my feelings are because of the timing was right. You know, I didn't feel shoved out the back door, or left in the front door.
Yes.
Dylan Michael's comments in the media, very important for me. And nice, because I didn't know what I was going to say. I didn't ask them what to write. They're old enough to they're going to read what they want, or not written anything. And I would have expected or respected anything. But no, I think the time's right. And I think having that time has refreshed me. It's given me a chance to look at things differently, really assess my work, but in a space where I can do it, where I'm alone and I'm not got, I've got 5 missed calls that I've got to return. I was hoping to think about this. So that's been great. So I know when I do go back in at some point, and I will, I actually think I'll be a better version of that. But I also look back on incredible pride at Norwich of what we achieved. You know, you've been to the training ground recently, you were at the training ground on my first press conference. You know, to see that difference, that doesn't just happen, that's not a fluke. You know, see the two promotions, they're amazing, win the league, and now having been part of building a third promotion team that's going to be in and around it, you know, it shows that we could do it again. I think all three managers, you know, we sacked Dean Smith and we're fifth in the league. I'd still question that Dean wasn't right at that period, but I'd still challenge anyone and say, he's not the manager. I'm not sure about that. And then obviously Daniel, success up, said it all. And I think even now with David, people are like, it's not too bad. You know, you look at his success at Huddersfield, in keeping them in the Premier League is like, wow, he obviously knows his way around how to manage, right? So I mean, yeah, just super, super sort of proud of him. I know we did a lot right. Loads of things to improve. Of course there is, and I've always been honest on that. But I'd say a lot more right than wrong.
That's an interesting point, because going back to that Cardiff weekend, it's just popped into my head. I think you penned that sort of open letter, didn't you? I think the Friday night before the game. And that was very self-reflective, like you've just been there, you know. And I think you talked about, you know, of course, you've made mistakes and you have regrets. And that, I mean, you've talked a few times here now about when you go back in. I mean, what would you do? Or maybe relative to your Norwich spell now, what would you do different, you think? Or would you do anything different?
Yeah, I'll definitely. I think I'd be probably very less open in the media. A lot less open in the media. So I think it eventually gives a stick to be beaten with. Not necessarily by you guys, but by supporters. And, you know, Norwich, more than Huddersfield, that would be doing anyway, because Dean Holder would do it a lot, the owner. It was very clear when it came to Norwich, the owners don't talk. It was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the feeling I got very early was there'd been a communication breakdown with the club and lack of transparency for supporters, etc. And, you know, as a board, it was agreed that I was a new guy, maybe naive on my side. Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much. Have a good, thank you. That was lovely.
Could I have a little latte?
Yeah, cheers. So it was a bit like, well, I'll come and talk. I'll come in front of that. You know, and I was always protecting board level, coaches. We never had a chief exec while I was at the club. We didn't chairman in the area for a year, and then the opportunity he left for whatever reason he left for. So it was like, it always became a bit like a spokesman. And I look back on that sometimes distracted from being able to do my job. But at the same time, my nature to protect people was like, if there's a shitstorm, I'll front it up, I'll do it. And I look back and think, actually, the times other people should have spoken and protected. Not necessarily protected me from that, but others not brought me into that. Because it became then just a figure where if someone was rubbish, blame me. And it's like, I don't agree on season ticket prices or who the shirt sponsor is or whatever, but you almost become that. Amount of people in the stadium will say, it's shite, that sponsor or whatever. And I'm like, I don't even know what sponsor is. Like, with regards, I can tell you what the sounds. I don't look at the roof, I look at the pitch. So I look back and think, I've got to try and
well, not try, I will step back from that and go, no, that's not for me. Don't get me wrong, if I need to front things up, I think I've proven, I've got the credentials that I don't mind having that. I'm putting myself 100% for that. But yeah, I think I got that wrong, if I'm honest. Because I think then that took some of my focus away from what was really important within the job, and just drained my energy for them things. And I come out of Norwich, now having been out of Norwich, knowing that, my God, I was that tired. I didn't realise at the time how tired I was, running on absolute empty. Yeah. I only know that now because I know how I feel since, to go, Jesus. I felt horrendous before. You know, and every day was a battle to get through because you were that sort of drain. So I think that would be the main one.
Yeah.
Whilst I think I also think it's important because I am a football fan. And I also do hate interviews where you get fogged off on an answer. So I also think when you do speak, you should be honest. But I think you owe it to you as a journalist. I think you owe it to, if you're going to do it, you may as well be honest with people so they know what you're doing as well. I do think that was a strength of mine, as much as it's probably ended up being a bit of a weakness. But I do think, at least I think when I spoke, people would go, oh, he's not just turning a line here. He's, at least he's being honest with us. We know where we stand. Might not always like it. Often people didn't like it, but I didn't try and kid him. It was a bit like, that's how I feel. That's what I think it is. This is what we'll learn from it. And yeah, some people liked that, obviously some people didn't, but I think at least you knew. I think you probably always gone away going, well, we know I was on the line, and he's been honest with us. You know, never once have I lied to you guys in public. And to, I never said to you, oh no, we're never going to sign a letter. And then 24 hours later, we sign it, and I make you look stupid. I've never done that. Because I don't think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I actually think it's right to be honest. But yeah, when I look back as well, you know, obviously some of my comments were stupid. But I regret them because it just caused me problems.
Is there any sprints on Valentine? I mean, the women's thing.
When we once were at the women's team at Norwich, they never trained at Connell until I got involved in the club. They never had sports science support, physios, but all the things came because I signed off to go, yes, we can do it, we need to do more. We can't turn the women's team professional yet in my time there because the costs, etc. We haven't got the money to do that. But what can we do? Well, we can give them a better training facility. We can get games at Carrow Road. We can inspire the next generation to be able to come and have connection with the girls' team. So, you know, if you're a young girl, rather than just seeing on Hernandez being interviewed, you can see one of the girls being interviewed. You know, so I know when everyone else knows at football club, actually the doors he's opened for the women's teams is off the charts compared to what they've had before. And that's why that doesn't worry me. But again, it got me told because I was being honest. I haven't watched a women's game before. I'm not going to lie. You know, I hear people lie all the time in the media and do their agendas about, oh, I love this, I love that, I support that, support that. You know, do you? Because if someone actually really poked them and said, go on, then, name the England women's team, which won the Euros. And I mean, some of these people on national radio stations, etc., would go, I thought you said hold it. I thought you were a huge supporter of it.
Yeah.
I bet you can name the England team from 1996 Euros, just 30 years ago. And that's my, again, I always have to sit at the club. I struggle with people pushing political agendas just to look good in the media, or just to, it's the right thing to look like we're supporting it. Well, no, the right thing is to actually fully support it if you believe in it.
Yeah.
You know, so Ukraine, everyone wears a little badge. Well, you can believe that much in them. Give them money, you'll go out and help them. Go out and help them fight. Don't just wear a badge. And then you go to bed that night, never think of it again. I just struggle.
Moving off that, I mean, you said there earlier about, you know, maybe there were sticks that people would beat you with, metaphorically. And
I give them the sticks.
Yeah.
That's my fault.
Yeah. But slightly in a, not through anything that you maybe feel you did, but the recruitment one was always one towards the end anyway. You know, there was windows where it maybe didn't come off in terms of, and to be fair, you have talked about, well, if you'd have had the funds available, you'd have gone and got Premier League grade players. I'm thinking of the window before you went back into the Premier League the second time around, summer of 21. But to counter that narrative now, right here, right now, you look at Sara, you look at Science even, you look at Sargent, Johnny Rose, a homegrown, you've touched on.
Angus.
Angus one. Yeah. All those players, if they, either this coming summer window or subsequent windows were to move on, substantial figures because of what they're doing on the pitch now, and they're all players who were under you and your recruitment people. So again, is that a lazy narrative that the recruitment in certain windows?
I think it's an easy narrative. I think you see it at every club, right? So Man United have a poor, bad example. Newcastle have an average season in people's eyes. Yeah. After doing a great season,
our team was rubbish.
Was it? Because the other thing as well, when the players we signed with Norwich normally were undervalued players, young players.
Yeah.
You don't hit the ground running. Yeah. You were there for the birth of Wendy, if you like. It took him until. I mean, his first goal was against Brentford at home. Team close to the long ball, Thomas Frank's first game.
Down the middle. Brentford. Down the middle, yeah.
That's his first goal. I think it was late October. It's like, that took him. He signed for us in, following January, but let's say joined us in the June. It took him a long time to score his first goal, and from that point, he then set fire and all the rest of it. So these guys take time. I always remember Bergkamp, he's similar age to me. When he came, first 6 months, this guy's rubbish. Gun Premier League great. It's like, that's one of the best players in the world. He took his time to adapt. So I think it's recruitment, it's always judge it at the end, which is super hard when you're live in the middle of it. But what I'd say about the recruitment one is since Lee Duncan had a recruitment, which is after that summer Premier League window, I would challenge people to go, other than Marquinhos alone, name another thing out of that. So he did, I'll go for him, Sarah, Nunez, Aaron Ramsey. That was when we signed that summer window. The window marking.
So that's summer 22, is it? After the Premier League season.
Yes, so when Dean was manager. So that's summer 22. Yeah, summer 22. Yeah. So Lee Dunham Henry confirmed in the September 21. He didn't do the summer Premier League.
Yeah.
Right. So since we signed no one in the January in that Premier League season. So then we did Sarah, Nunez, Ramsey that summer. Under his
other recruitment. Yeah.
January Marquinhos, argue didn't work out. Then last summer, Stacey, free transfer, Duffy, free transfer, Barnes, free transfer, Kellen Fisher, cheap, Borja Sykes, free transfer, Fastnack. And people go, oh, Fastnack's a great, scored 7 goals. So there you go, that's a winger who's rubbish, scored 7 goals.
Yeah.
Don't know if Wendy ever scored 7 for us in the season. Maybe not. I'm not comparing to Wendy, by the way. Who else did he sign? Wang.
Yeah.
Did great until the injuries. So the point is, like, I think the group, and then you go back to that summer before and go, well, let's say, I think if Sargent goes now, it's going to be over £20 million. You know, he's going to pay for all of the others, and clubs have to wait for him. The market was open. Norwich City signing players directly from South America. 6 years ago, people laughed. It would have been, what, we're not that club? It's like, we're now miles ahead of us. When I say we're Norwich, are miles ahead in their markets because of all of that work. You know, even emerging talent ones, if we look at, Vicente Reyes, since Mariella's taken over that, Vicente Reyes, Manu, who's obviously doing great down at Warsaw, Kellen Fisher would come in to that category. So it's like, I think it's been more hits than misses, certainly since Lee became the head of recruitment. He's top class, but you're never going to get more right. It's fact. Especially when you're in any club. I think if you're at Chelsea, you'd argue, is their two midfielders worth $250 million? Maybe not. I think when you're Norwich, last summer we spent £2 million. That's fascinating. Everyone else was freeze. And it's like, Stoke spent over 20, for example. So if you're only spending that, you're going to get some wrong within that because of where we're at. But it's kind of the talent in the group. It's the assets, the big assets you then got, like Sir Brad Hill doing great things on there as well. It's like, all the work we did, I think 23 debuts now for the academy in the last 6 years. And if you look at all that work, that's not fluke. That's good. You can't fluke that. You can't fluke a South American coming off. That's just hard work and then being brave enough to do it, which is probably where I came in. So Lee and his guy did all the groundwork on a Gabby or a Nunez. And the guy at the end has to sign off, I suppose. And it's like, but also Dean Smith needs to take some credit from that period because he was our head coach. And it would have been easy to go, two lads from South America, stuff that, get me someone else on loan. Isaac Hayden was signed for the lesson. But he backed it. So I know, come on, this is going to take the club forward. Again, being selfless. And I think we've had a lot of staff, Daniel at the start, you know, playing young players, selfless. We never heard of Buendia. He was crying his eyes out when we saw Pritchard, and I said, listen, we've got a better one. I'm not sure. It's like, but he backed it. Give him the chance, give Madison his chance. Thank God he did, so we could sell him as a club, you know. So, you know, and then Dean came in and, you know, yes, I'm like, come on. I know as a club, this is a part of our strategy. You've been working, I'm happy. Come on, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then Dean, you know, he's the one who joined the road. That's not as Gabby pushed him onto a whole new Saints. You know, so I think it's a collective of everyone going, trying to protect the club and trying to help the club sort of grow.
Yeah. Bringing it back round to you, look, I mean, as you say, in focus now is what you've got ahead of you in this personal challenge, but the other side of it, I think I heard an interview where you said almost like at your age now, when you host Everest, that'll be almost the second part of your career.
Yeah.
I mean, does it have to be sporting director, technical director? I mean, how open-minded are you?
I'm super open-minded, to be honest. I think what I do know is got to be with good people. I've got to work with good people, whether that's a club in the Champions League or whether that's a club in the National League. It's about people, whether it's in a different sport or a different industry. I've got to work with good people, because I've been lucky at Huddersfield and Norwich to have that. But I think if I'm going to go back into football, it needs to be a club where, if they're not in the Premier League already, it's a club to get there. I've got the resources to help stay there, because I don't want to go through what I've been through twice here, which is first Premier League season, we spent 750 grand on Sam Byron. Second Premier League season, we got relegated, we had to sell Godfrey and Lewis because of COVID. Then when we got reprogrammed, had to sell Buendia to try and add to the squad. That's so hard, and you get no thanks for at the end. You know, when you get, like, Burnley are probably going to get relegated now, and they've spent 100 million. And we get beaten up and judged the same as them. Like, I'd say, if you give me 100 million, and didn't have to sell the best player, which is Buendia, let's say, I would say, well, let's say we stay up, because you bloody hard at Premier League, you really know, the level's outrageous. But I'd say, well, we're really giving a good shot, and I think, I know, if I go back in the club, I've got to have them possibilities where it could genuinely be a success at that level, because if not, it's horrible, because you just firefighting, you get beaten up for it, and it's a bit like, what can they actually do? You know, you're working with your hands tied behind your back. And you know that, so that's why I never complained about it. It's like, these are the rules of Norwich, you know, and Ben will find that now. And, you know, probably the club aren't going to have to sell a player, because of the PNS and stuff like that. But that's the model, that's, you know, we've sold, since I was in, 8 players. We beat the transfer record 8 times of selling. So that's what we have to do. That's why you buy a Sarah, that's why you buy a Sergeant, that's why you get signed, that's why you pull up academy players. But it's hard. You lose 20 goals out of your team, and someone says, oh, you got to replace them though, and you've got a million, and you've got 2 million, and you've got nothing. And it's like, Jesus Christ, that's hard. It's super hard, because you're constantly, it's like you're constantly being stupid. Through no back, that's the rules of the club, but then you can either accept it and go, oh, let's just be mediocre. But you don't want to be that. You want to be ambitious. You want to get to the Premier League, and you want to keep pushing. You want to keep growing.
Yeah.
But for me, it's been a club, and hopefully at Norwich we've got. Now, I think with Mark at Emotio, I think he is super ambitious and has got the wealth to support that. He's not stupid. He's just got money. So I think Norwich can end up being that club as well. And I hope for them's sake, if that's the case. But I think for my next challenge, as I've said to people, I've obviously been approached since I've left. I'm like, I chose to leave Norwich not to go and do this.
Yeah.
With the greatest respect, it's like, I may as well have stayed at Norwich and done that, where my family are, with great owners, top fan base, top facilities, amazing staff,
yeah.
As opposed to, oh yeah, I've left that to come here. So there's no point. So yeah. It's got to be right.
You said there, I mean, obviously there has been approaches made to you even since, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been nice, actually. I said to my wife, it must be that I've been married for 20 years. And you split up or whatever, and you go dating again. It's nice when someone rings and goes, they want to have a date. What's that? Because you do sit there and go, what if no one rings? Because that is the uncertainty bit of,
yeah.
You know, and I was talking to Steve Cooper about this, because obviously he's at our work now as well, and he was the same of like, I was worried, what if no one rings? You know, you do. You sit there and go, what if no one rings? So when they do, it's nice, but also someone gave me advice 2 days after they left around me and said, don't take the first job, take your time. And I was like, because you'd be tempted to take it. And he was right,
yeah.
I was tempted to take it. And it wouldn't have been right. But I think just being loved again made me tempted before Christmas. And then it's like, what am I doing? You know, pull back.
I mean, that's human nature.